So, hello everyone. This is Chase Vergary, it's Tuesday, June 17th, and I have a very exciting special guest. We have no bumper music, intro music because I'm in the middle of life changes, but I do have a great special guest, which is Ryan Carchi from the LA Times. As you may have heard or knew, there was an open media practice for the men's basketball team last week. And I was lucky enough to go, and so was Ryan. So now we have two people there that can talk about what they saw during this practice. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. I guess we represent half of the contingent, the media contingent, I guess, that was there.
Yeah,
So.
there was a fifth person behind me though that was asked, and during the press conference room stuff that was asking questions. I didn't know who that person was though. So
I never
anyway.
know with USC basketball media completely. Someone
Yeah.
shows up randomly.
Right. But Connor was there, and then Rich Rubin was there. So it was cool. It was my first time that I've done something like this, and I'm not really lifelong member of the of journalism or the media. So it was a cool experience to I've been to the practices before, but not quite like that. So it was a fun experience. Before we started though, I thought it would be good because we just did not you know a couple of months ago we did a podcast, and I listened to it the other day to see like some of the topics we were discussing. And I think some of the first question I asked you the last podcast was like, what was the difference between your kind of access to the program between the Andy Enfield years and the Eric Musselman years? And I think that might have led to some policy changes.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could connect dots there for sure. Well, I will say this: when we were there for the summer practice, they Muss addressed the media at the end of his presser and was just kind of like, "Let us know if we can do more for you guys." Which anytime a coach does that, I certainly appreciate it. But I'm biased, but I think. Especially if you're the USC basketball coach, that's a relationship that just makes sense for you to have on the positive end because USC basketball hasn't always been, covered that closely. So it seems like things are certainly moving in the right direction.
Yeah, and I'm really glad they've been very proactive. Like I said, I mean, I'm not, I don't work for a major newspaper. I have like a podcast and a website, and I'm a huge fan. I mean, I follow sport, but they were very proactive in reaching out to me, so I was very happy about that. I know the other podcast that covers USC. I know they've been reaching out to that podcast, so that's great. And they had a good call or a good discussion with Michael Musselman. And we had Earl Boykins on our show. So it's been great to have that. I hope that it seems like they're going to keep it up. I really do hope they keep it up. And just like I guess we could just dive in about some of the things we saw. At least initially, I really hope they keep it up because the team looked pretty exciting from the standpoint of like. Even if these guys don't hit a ton, hit their shots, they look pretty athletic to me. I mean, I didn't get to go to a ton of practices last year, but what'd you think on just the eyeball test looking at the team?
You said the exact word that I was thinking as you started saying that. They just look more athletic, especially in the front court. It's almost even not even comparable to what they had last year. And no offense to Josh Cohen, but Kofi or Coffee, is it Coffee or Kofi?
I think it's Kofi.
Okay. Jacob Kofi and Ezra Osser are both just like, those are men. Down low. And I think just the physical presence of those two, that just kind of changes the game for this team. And I think that's where I noticed it the most, that stark of a difference. And even on the wing though, too, I mean, the length of Chad Baker-Mazzara and Amari'on Dickerson, I think just defensively, it feels like this team has a higher ceiling. Than last year's team does. Now I'm really curious, just on a scoring front, who kind of takes over and goes into more of the alpha role that Desmond Claude had filled at times and Wesley Yates had set to into at times. I'm not sure who that is yet, but talent-wise, it just seemed like this was a more talented team.
Yeah, I mean, just the athleticism is really stark. So we can set the stage a little bit. Apparently, I think they're doing 48-minute practices, basically every morning. I think they're doing 48 minutes 5 days a week. They've done the math, and this allows them to do most of the summer, or at least a good chunk of the summer, so they get to see the guys every day. When you get out, we got out there. It was Elijah Arenas was not practicing with the team. He was a spectator. He's still a high school student because remember he's a reclassifier, so he's still got to finish up school. There does not seem to be, as far as I can tell, any major concerns around that that were expressed to us. So he was not participating. So we had the starting five were Rodney Rice, Chad Baker-Mazzara, Amarian Dickerson, Ezra Azar, and Jacob Kofi. And for sure, they got the four of those guys were also brought to the press conference at the end, which is Rice, Baker Mazzara, Ezra, and Kofi. So, I mean, to me, putting aside Elijah Arenas, those seem to be the four guys that the staff, or at least Musselman, seems to think are kind of like the bedrock players, like the big players. And I think Dickerson will most likely, when the season starts, be like the sixth man off the bench. That's just like my initial view of the way. Now, look, we watched one practice, and it's like they're going to have tons and things are going to change. But that was kind of just my perception of things. Well, do you agree with that, or do you have a different thought?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, it seems pretty clear who that starting five is. And it's funny, I feel like I was thinking about this the other day. For the longest time, and even in college basketball, it was more prevalent in football, but you didn't really know exactly who the starting five would be coming into a season. Like there'd be some competition maybe, coming into camp and whatever. But I feel like now in the NIL era, you kind of know. I mean, the guys who are getting the biggest deals are the guys who are going to be valued in the way of starters. So I think at least to start the season, and I know Musselman has shown a willingness to be flexible and change, so maybe that changes. But I think it is pretty clear that those four are locked in, and Elijah Arenas will almost certainly step in, I would imagine, day one as that fifth starter. So I'll be curious, that six man role I think is kind of interesting, because you have, I know Terrence Williams has been hurt, still sort of dealing with this wrist injury, surprisingly. So lingered a lot longer, I think, than they expected. And I know we didn't really get to see a ton of Jaylen Brownell, but I've heard good things from what the staff has seen, early on. He's a little bit different of a four, kind of a stretch four with, has a very smooth, silky shot. I don't think we saw him hit any threes while we were watching
Not
practice,
generally,
but
definitely not during live action. It wasn't until like they're doing the drills at the end that he started hitting a few, but yeah.
yeah, but it seems like they're very pleased with him. And I also was impressed by Jordan Marsh. And I know they have been very impressed, just in terms of what he's been able to show early on. I mean, it sounds like, the trust is growing, and this could be a guy who's getting 20 minutes on a given night. So maybe he ends up being the sixth man. But I do think Dickerson, just by virtue of his defense and his arms and just length, it just that will be a problem, I feel like, for opposing offenses. So it would make sense if he ends up being that sixth guy.
Yeah, and just for like, there was a one sequence where I watched where I think it was Jerry Easter had the ball, and Jerry's like, basically a point guard. And Jerry looked good, by the way. I'm not disparaging him at all, but he had come down one time on a kind of transition, and Dickerson just jumped out and completely locked him down. Completely locked him down, kind of forced him to make a tough pass, had nowhere to go. And then later on the same sequence, someone was like open for a layup, and Dickerson came out of nowhere and blocked the shot. So like Dickerson is a guy who, I mean, he legitimately looks like he can guard one through four and help out on the five, you know, like on, I don't think you want him guarding a true center, but I think, you know, he can definitely give help and help rim protect. That, like, now on the offensive end, I'm not sure all that he's going to be able to contribute. Like, I think there's a big question mark, especially if he can or doesn't hit his three pointers. His entire kind of like shooting package on offense, but on defense, like he really jumps out on defense.
Yeah, it's funny. Musselman, you can tell he's not lying when he's talking about the weaknesses in his roster because he immediately goes and addresses those exact weaknesses. Like perimeter defense, I know, especially at the guard position, was kind of something that he had talked about wanting to improve. And I feel like you just see that length a little bit more, at the two and the three spot. And then, rim protection was a huge problem. And, they very clearly addressed that. So I think the strategy this year of just team building really makes sense to me. And when you consider kind of the scenario that they entered into with Desmond Claude sort of pulling the rug out from under things, at the 11th hour, and Wesley Yates, you're really excited and encouraged by his development leaving, even if you might have had an idea about that. But just to be able to pivot and still get Rodney Rice to get Baker Mazzara after that. It really feels like this team has been well conceived in a way that is a little bit different than last year when you're kind of just trying to throw whatever against the wall and see what sticks in this compressed amount of time.
Yeah, and you this was, now look, I didn't see practices last year, so I don't know exactly like the barometer for this, but they were going hard transition the entire time. I mean, it was like fast pace, fast pace, fast pace. You really got the sense that they want to push the ball, and really got a sense like trying to push the ball in the way that would have been like really uncomfortable for a lot of the players. I think last season, who saw a lot of action. I mean, you talk about like Josh Cohen, but even guys like Buzo Agbo, I don't think would be as comfortable in that kind of transition. Really, even like St. Thomas, and like even like Rodney Rice felt comfortable in the role that they had him at, and he was definitely the lead guard out there. Maybe he will, he'll only spend 20 to 25 minutes a game at lead guard, and maybe we have Marsh taking up those minutes. But he, in the style that they were playing, he felt comfortable and he was able to push the ball. I mean, there was just a lot of back and forth.
Yeah, and I think that is kind of the question, like who is going to initiate the offense when it's not Rodney Rice? I don't know that they really know the answer to that question until you get everyone together and sort of feel it out. But I think in a perfect world, they would love to, let Baker Mazzara initiate the offense if he takes it up the court. Maybe Arenas is also doing a little bit of that. So I think there's, some versatility in this lineup to be able to do that. But I wouldn't say that they like very clearly address the point guard position in a way that like is guaranteed to work. That is kind of still a
Right.
question. But that was the problem last year too. And I think, with Rice, it feels like he's more of a natural fit as point guard in this offense than maybe Desmond Claude was.
That it definitely felt that way to me. I mean, it just from the standpoint of just looking at like how high the dribble was, the ease of just kind of ball handling, quicker decisions. Now, look, I watched 148-minute practice, so I don't want to jump to too many conclusions. But there's just a feel for, you always got the sense with Desmond Claude that he was not really a point guard. If you were to see Rice out there, you would not have, if someone had never seen Rice play before and they watched that one practice, no one would have said, oh, that guy's definitely not a point guard. I think they would have said, oh, maybe that guy's a point guard. Maybe he's not. But, He looked the part. He didn't seem like, yeah, he didn't seem like he was out of rhythm for what they were trying to do from a lead guard standpoint. So one of the more interesting guys to see out there, especially with all the transition stuff they did, was Gabe Dines, the 7'3" kid who they have listed at 7'5", which is a pretty, they have to add it's like they have to have the 2 inches. I'm like, if we had like a 7'9" guy, would they be like, oh, we got to add those 2 inches to the 7'9" guy? I really don't know what Dines is going to look like when we ultimately, because like there's the Dines, I've seen a lot of him on tape, watched quite a bit of him playing last season. Watching him out there, I can't say like, oh, he looks so much stronger, but he did move pretty well. He seemed to move in transition pretty well. He locked up Ezra on a drive, like an ill-conceived drive, I'd say, to the basket one time and blocked his shot. He was kind of overpowered, like Dickerson tried to guard him around the rim and he kind of overpowered him. So I just thought in those brief moments, he looked pretty good to me. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, and I think like defensively, everyone seems pretty confident in him having an impact right away. And I think, like you said, you see that just by virtue of his size, and he can move better than I would say, other people in the front court in the past or past season. But yeah, my question is, does he bring anything offensively? I'm not sure. I actually spoke to his dad at one point around the time that he had committed, and he was pretty convinced that he never got the shot he needed or he should have gotten at Youngstown State to affect things offensively. So I'm not sure he's going to get that shot at USC either. But that said, I came away thinking, well, maybe this guy has a little bit more potential than I would have thought on that end, just sort of seeing the tools that he has at his disposal.
So if you were to compare him to someone like Donovan Clingan, who played for UConn, obviously great, great player, was, I think, he drafted in the lottery last year. Similar body types. Dines is probably a little taller, but Clingan is a super tall guy. Both move similarly. Clingan's probably moves a little better, but not a ton better, I would say. The biggest difference, though, was you couldn't really push. Even though Klingon is lean, he's strong. You can't just push him around. And I think that's going to be the thing with Dines. It's like, can he just get, he's not going to add like a ton of, he's not going to add like 60 pounds of weight. It's like, can he add just that strength that he can maintain his position down low? Because he is so tall that if you just don't push him off the block, he's going to get points. He's got a nice little touch around the rim and he's just got to hold that. So that's going to be, I think, for him, like, can he add enough strength that like people can't just move him out of the way?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, he's listed at 214 right now, which is 20 pounds less than Terrence Williams. So he does need to add some weight, I guess, if that is the accurate number. It's hard to say with the 7'5" measurement
Sure.
next to it. But yeah, and I think like, that's an understanding in the building too, that his dad had mentioned that. When I talked to him, the problem is like that's a talking point for every like
Right.
basketball player over 7 feet forever. So, and it doesn't always work out. So we'll see. I think these next couple of months are going to be crucially important. I mean, they don't have anyone else on the roster like him, so he's going to have a role in some fashion. But just what that is, how they decide to rotate that front court will be interesting. I think there are going to be more potential combinations, especially with that group, than there were before.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see. I mean, like, Klingon, I know, is listed now at 280,
Oh, wow.
which, yeah. So now I don't feel like he was listed that much early in his college career. I feel like he was listed more like around 240. But yeah, I mean, like, the Dines needs to, is going to need to add some weight. That being said, he didn't look like a, like, super like a rail. Like he looked like he had at least some muscle tone on him. So maybe that's already part of the development. I guess we'll have to see. You
He
mentioned
is
Jordan.
6 pounds heavier than Chet Holmgren, for what it's worth.
Well, there we go. There we go. He does not move like Chet
No, no.
Holmgren, though, unfortunately. So you mentioned Jordan Marsh. So The interesting thing for me about Marsh, what I was like, you're curious to see, like, obviously you want to know, can he finish? And that was something that I talked to Earl Boykins about, like, because Earl at five, whatever, 5'4", 5'5", in the NBA could actually finish. So he knew how to time his shots properly. Marsh is going to, that's going to be an issue for Marsh because he's not 5'4". He's like probably 5'9", 5'10". So he's a little bit taller, but he definitely got to his spots. Like he didn't necessarily knock the shots down, but like when they were doing half court stuff, whenever he needed to take the ball, he could get to the spot he wanted to on the court where he got the shot that he wanted to take. Then he's got to knock him down. So that's going to be the thing for him. But he's definitely, I mean, he's quick and he can get to where he needs to be. At least that's from very limited actual watching him. That's how he looked to me.
And I was surprised because, he's 164 pounds. He's a small guy. I thought he was pretty active defensively. I mean, he's not going to be able to. I think you're going to try to hide him most of the time, just because of his size. But he's got really active hands, and I've heard that from other people too. Just how much that's kind of turned heads early on, and that you would assume that that would be the weak point of this game. But yeah, it seems like lots of praise for Jordan Marsh early, and he was very productive last year. Now, granted, in the Big South, but still newcomer of the year in that conference, averaged 19 points a game. So I'm always fascinated by the guys in this transfer portal era who come in as like the big dog in a mid-major conference and how they adjust when it comes to that. And I think, the results vary so wildly. I think that's it. But if Musselman and his staff can really like figure out how to capitalize on that, then that's a route to this team actually, being good consistently year in and year out, finding those kind of diamond in the rough guys like maybe Marsh.
There's a cool YouTube video. It's not like actual game action. It's like somebody went to the game to like a videographer went and captured the game where UNC Asheville, who Marsh played against High Point. And so that's like a local rivalry in North Carolina of these mid-majors. First of all, the first thing you notice is like the arena. I mean, it probably only holds 4,000 or 5,000 people, but it was like sold out. Like it was rocking. And Marsh and Keza Giffa went at it one. I mean, they were heads up going at each other. Now Giffa obviously was committed to SC for about 30 seconds. It was interesting because we already had Marsh, so we would have had both of them. I think it felt a little redundant, but I mean, Giffa I think is a pretty good player. But Marsh in that game, I mean, he scored like 30 points. I mean, he was really scoring. Now, he struggled to guard Giffa a little bit because of just the size and the strength. But Giffa couldn't keep up with the scoring that Marsh had. Marsh really scored a lot of points in that game. Now, over the course of the season, his three-point shooting wasn't as high, so that's something to keep an eye on. Maybe if he just takes higher quality shots and, he can really improve that. Not having Giffa on the team, instead now we replaced him with the Dartmouth transfer Ryan Cornish, who did not participate. He doesn't necessarily pass the eyeball test standing on the sideline, but
Not quite.
yeah, no, like I mean, they're definitely we have walk-ons that look like we have walk-ons that look like they would dominate him. But you actually have to play the game, I think from watching a lot of the video on Cornish, I think he's as far as like efficiencies for the season, Giff is rated higher. There's no question, but like he was a little bit of a redundant player to have another point guard right up behind Marsh. I think Cornish makes a little more sense because Cornish is really more of a jump shooter. And if you look at his like you dive into his numbers, like when he doesn't dribble and he just shoots, he's like 94th percentile in shooting. But the moment he puts the ball on the ground, it's like he drops to like 22nd, 27th percentile. So having maybe a catch and shoot guy who can defend a little bit to pair with Marsh as an option could be interesting. But we need to see Cornish in action before, like, because like I said, like looking on the sideline, you're like, wow, that's a the USC basketball player.
That's a real Big Ten basketball player.
Yeah.
No, I think you're right. Like, they maybe you do eliminate the redundancies. I think they would have probably taken the alternative of Gifford being on the team first, just from a pure talent perspective.
Yeah.
But I think you're right in the sense that I don't know that they were going to go after another guy like that. That was more just liking the guy specifically. But yeah, I really don't know what to expect from Cornish, to be honest. But to your point, like, he has a very clear role, it sounds like, and I think everyone probably understands that. And it doesn't hurt to have guys who, completely understand what their role is and how you should be using them.
Yeah, so if you go, I always go to Evan Miakawa's website to look at like try to get the efficiencies on a player. Basically, tells you, in relative terms, how well does a team perform when this guy is on the court versus when he's off the court, and you try to adjust for the quality of the opponent. And Gifford was like one of the top offensive players in the country, basically, like especially one of the top transfers. Like when he was on the court for High Point. They would score. Now, High Point was a really efficient offense, and they had, but like Gifford was right at the top there. And like they, when he was on the court, they were absolutely stellar. Not much on the defensive side, but whatever. Cornish, even though he put up a bunch of big numbers for Dartmouth this season, was not a good offensive impact player for Dartmouth, if you look at the numbers, but he was really good defensive impact player for Dartmouth, which is like
Yeah,
kind of counterintuitive.
that is
So,
interesting.
yeah, so the combo could be, look, it could be totally right. Gifford could have this like crazy great season for Ole Miss and be like, we could be like, oh my God, I wish we had that guy on our team. But it's possible that if the guys are just going to be like reserve players, relatively, in the same realm of performance level, then maybe you're like, okay, well, we got the guy that maybe helps our team a little bit better. But I mean, I guess we just have to see.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think we've covered most of the players. We didn't talk a ton about Brunell. You discussed him a little bit. He's really, I mean, he's got, there's some smoothness, but yeah, he did not hit his jumpers in that practice. And it was not until they got to the drills afterwards. And even at the start of the drills, he was missing until he got into a rhythm. So that's going to be a big factor. Like there's video of him against when, Samford played Michigan State this past season. There's a lot of video on that game, and I think, I mean, he scored a lot of that game. He scored in the 20s, and he was hitting his shots. I mean, you got him an open look from three, he would hit it, and he also could go inside. So, he's going to be an important factor because they are going to need a guy who can catch and shoot at some point. That's probably, one of the things that if you looked at like the lineup, the starting lineup they had out there. When we were at practice, if you have Dickerson playing the three, you're not going to have a lot of extra shooting. So we definitely want a guy who can get out there and shoot. Hopefully Brunell gives us that guy. And then there was like Terrence Williams, who obviously didn't participate. One of the things that was interesting to me, like I think there was a moment where like I think Terrence Williams is listed at like 6'7" or something like that. And there was a moment where Baker Mazzara like stood next to him, and Baker Mazzara looked like he was 3 inches taller. So I don't know the true heights on some of these guys, but like I was surprised, like for whatever reason, like Terrence Williams did not look as tall as I thought he would look compared to some of the guys. I don't know if they've done a better job. I mean, obviously, like Baker Mazzara is really lean, and like he does look
Yeah.
and wiry, so he looks really tall. I'm not sure if he's 6'7" or he might even be a little taller. I'm not sure. Whereas, like, I think Terrence Williams is probably closer to 6'5". But that's just a guess.
Baker Mazzara too, I felt like during that practice was so keyed up that he almost seemed like he was bigger. Like,
Yeah,
he
yeah.
just, like, the personality almost gave him like a couple extra inches. But he's so long. I was really stunned by how long he is, and I think, like, if they can get a transition offense going with him, and I haven't really watched a ton of Elijah Arenas, but I imagine, just them with Rodney Rice, like, that's a pretty lethal transition group, I would have to think.
Yeah, there. I mean, I go on this Discord discussion forum that Trilly Donovan runs, and some people have mentioned, like, Rodney Rice, Chad Baker-Mazzara, and Elijah Arenas is like, that's like kind of like a under, behind the scenes, or those like under the radar scary good combo. Those three guys, you put them out there. That's pretty tough. And then you obviously have an Ezra Azar and Kofi to go with, and potentially as starters. But we should talk a little about Kofi, because I mean he's going to start at the five. And to my biggest impression, I mean, I don't know about if he's going to be in the Big Ten, if he's going to be able to smack around with these other guys, or if he's going to get knocked off the block. But he really, like, he moves like a 3-4 forward. Like, he really moves nicely. He doesn't move like a five man. He moves like almost like a wing.
That was to me the most stunning difference of any aspect of this team, just to see him moving in the paint. And I think, like, I don't even know if we might be underrating how big of an impact that'll have. Because I do think that was such a weakness of this team a year ago. And I heard a lot of buzz kind of coming within the program about him just. Like in the possibility of him being on draft boards next year. Now, I don't know how much you want to believe of that in the first, month or so of them practicing, but just watching it that one day, like you look at it and you can sort of see it. Like I get what they mean. But I'll be curious to see him offensively and how that kind of how they use him going forward. Because they didn't really, I mean, they did, work some offense through Rashawn last year. But I feel like this is a different situation with him. So I'll be curious to see how they spotlight him as part of this offense.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll just say, if he has a season where he shoots 41% from three, he will be on draft boards. I mean, he moves so well that, like, and he's long enough that if he were to shoot like that, now that's a far cry from what he shot this past season. So, I mean, I don't know if he's going to get there. He's going to have to develop, because he's going to be an inside outside guy on offense. He's got to hit the threes. That's going to be a huge part of his game. So we'll see if he gets there. In the drills after practice, which I was watching the guys shoot threes, the big guy that shot the three the best was Dines. I think he was shooting like 78%, like 70-80% from three afterwards. I don't know how many threes he'll actually take when
I
he's,
would not count on that when it comes to
yeah,
the season.
definitely would not count on that. That's where, like, practice and drills do not necessarily mirror game performance. So, and then obviously we did this press conference afterwards. Just to give you, I mean, I think it shows up on the video, but like for the players, like Chad Baker-Mazzara is a larger than life personality, loves joking around, seems to love, really big, into having fun. You could That really is clear as could be. Kofi, I think, is trying to be reserved. It's like, okay, I'm still a young guy. I got an important place on the team here, but kind of really tries to, say the right things, have the right answers. Rodney Rice definitely, to me, had the demeanor of like, I'm the leader of this team. Is kind of a stoic, like, I'm going to be the guy, and that I'm taking on that responsibility. And then Ezra Azar is like, complete, like, he's got this personality that you could tell is like, his answers are, he's going to give you answers that no other athlete's going to give you. Like, he's thinking, when he hears a question, he's thinking about completely different things that, like, what's the scripted answer I'm supposed to be giving. So he seems like an interesting guy, and I'm kind of curious to see if that shows up more as the season goes on.
Yeah, and I think you're probably referring to this, but when I can't remember if I asked the question or someone else, but he explained after the other three what drew him to USC and just totally deadpanned. Well, my situation was a little bit different than the other guys. Coach Musk gave me the black Amex and then paused, which is great. I love an athlete who can, poke fun at the whole process, Well, I take
Yeah.
this stuff too seriously.
Yeah, he seems like He seems like he'd be a cool guy to just grab a beer with. I mean, I'm not sure he's probably of age now, but he seems like a really interesting guy and definitely wanting to. He is probably, outside the box thinker for sure.
I think there's going to be more personality on this team just in general, which I'm looking forward to. Now, that always can backfire in ways as well. So, but when you have a coach like Mus, who, is a pretty intense guy, like kind of like Chad Baker-Mazzara says, and put crazy with crazy, it might work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's good. So, like, I'm wondering because, I mean, my experiences with Mus have been great. I mean, very limited, but like, he's never been anything but accommodating, disrespectful, and fully respectful whenever I've asked anything of him and stuff. So, he obviously has like this reputation for going off the deep end and stuff like that. And, Earl Boykins was really. He was really candid about like what his big role in coming in was to like be the whisperer of Mus, like if Mus go cracks down and like this is what hey, this is what coach is trying to get out of you. But I don't think that playing for Mus is like as like I think it's actually probably pretty fun for the players. As maybe it is taxing over the course of a season, but I'm guessing it's probably pretty fun if like what I've seen in practices and games from him is pretty like representative of that situation. I mean, he demands a lot of his players, but it's not like he's demeaning or like screaming at them all the time. I'm sure he screams at them, in key moments if they like mess up. But he seems like a kind of coach that would, is really trying to get a lot of that out of the players. And I don't know if he crosses the line too often. It seems to me like I think. While they're in the moment, the players seem to like it. But who knows? Because, like, he brings in guys and then he's got a new team. So who knows?
Yeah, I guess it doesn't even matter anymore, really,
Yeah.
on that front. But no, I in doing my big profile last March or February, whenever that came out, I got the impression, just talking to people from his past, that he's probably changed a little bit in that regard, and how he handles his emotions as a coach. I think he's become more cognizant of that as he's gotten older. I mean, he's been doing this a long time. So, and yeah, and I think, like, certainly there are always going to be times when coaches don't get along, and his personality is a little bit maybe more explosive than a normal than your average run of the mill coach. I think he'd even admit that. But yeah, and we've seen no signs of that at USC. I haven't heard that from people behind the scenes. No players really have whispered about that, as far as I know. So, if anything, I mean, you had guys who, even like Wesley Yates, as far as I knew, and I know it was kind of an more of an amicable parting, I would say, than the whole Desmond Claude situation. But like, I believed him, and I think the staff believed him too, that they really worked together. I think that was kind of a bummer for them, but I think, that was maybe more about, Wesley comes from a background where, certainly to chase life-changing money is like a big thing. So I think there was a mutual understanding for sure in that situation. But these guys aren't leaving because they can't handle Mus. Now, even Desmond Claude, I never got the impression that
No,
was why.
I don't think so. That's all at all the case. And if it was, I think Terrence Williams would have left for sure, right? And he seems happy to stick around.
If anything, has been just effusive about sticking around.
Exactly. Let's just before we finish off, I just a couple things that Mus said during the press conference and what I found interesting. I asked him a question about if they had kind of, when they were trying to conceive what roster they wanted, based upon how things were going during the season, what kind of roster they wanted to build for the following year, if they had achieved what he was looking for. And Mus kind of downplayed that. He mentioned rim protection, really, but he definitely did not take any bait about saying, Oh, we weren't athletic last year, and now we're athletic now. He didn't say anything like that. He really wanted, seemed to want to focus on the individual players that they had brought in, and rather than recruiting around a print like a style or principle of type players they wanted, just like they recruited the best players that they thought they could get, kind of. I mean, and that seemed to be, I don't know if you remember that, but that seemed to be the message that he was trying to send in response to that question.
Yeah, and I think he may have referenced this in the answer to you. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he referenced it. I've told him this directly that I appreciated that he was totally honest about the team's shortcomings last year and how to build it and where they kind of fell short. That I remember having that conversation literally the first availability that he had last summer. There was a little bit less of that in this
Were you
media
at,
session.
was it you the one who asked him
I
about,
think,
and then he said, we need to stay
yeah.
healthy, which
Yeah.
was
And I think like maybe to some degree it's like less obvious where those holes are than it was last year. I mean, last year all you had to do was look at the roster. I think you or I could have said, well, point guard's problem, center's problem. But I do think like he has been a little bit more close to the vest about that, which and maybe that's not intentional at all, but I do think they had a lot more time to conceive of this and thus are certainly like feel better about where it landed in terms of the lineups that they can create. So I think there's probably maybe he doesn't even know what those weaknesses are yet.
Building on that, because this is kind of connected, he Parsh and Bart was talking about some of the struggles of the past season, and he did seem to think he thought losing Terrence Williams was a really costly thing for them last year, and he seems to really like Terrence Williams a lot. Now, I have to say, I gotta be honest, I don't really see it, but like I'm not a college basketball head coach who's been to the Elite Eight, back to back years like he has. So maybe, maybe he's saying something I'm not. I will be curious how Terrence Williams fits in with this team, because I think he doesn't really have like the profile of the athleticism of some of the guys that he's brought in, but he does have the shooting. So yeah, well, so I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, and I think Terrence too, they really liked him within the building. Even before his injury, they kind of saw him as a like veteran voice that really fit what they wanted to do. So I think like in some regard, you want that guy to understand that he's a part of the picture, and I do think like maybe by what you heard from him, like you'd think, oh, well, maybe he could start like with the, sort of complimentary nature of what he said. I don't think that's gonna happen. I think like, when I watched him at Michigan, having watched a little bit of that, the teams that he was on, I was never that impressed, by him. I don't really see him as someone who can sort of score at will if he wanted to. He strikes me as more of like a 10 points a game kind of guy. But I think that, he could certainly find a role off of the bench and on the scene, but I also wouldn't be that surprised if that role maybe diminishes for someone else. So we'll have to wait and see. It doesn't help that he's still dealing with this wrist injury. So,
That's true, very true.
yeah, although he's, a smart guy who's been around, it's not like he doesn't understand, how things work with Mus. So, hard to say really where he's gonna end up in the lineup.
Okay, well, wrapping it up here. Any last thoughts before? I mean, it was one practice, it was 48 minutes, but we did get some discussion. Any final thoughts you got?
I'll wrap it up with a little story, an exciting thing for me. So I grew up in Michigan, Southeast Michigan, and my mom went to Eastern Michigan. So when I was growing up, my great uncle had Eastern Michigan basketball season tickets. So we would go, and Earl Boykins was the star of those teams when I was, I don't know, I was probably like 8, 9, 10. And that he was like, funny enough, he was like one of the first basketball players I was like, this guy's awesome. Like, what a cool player. And I just like found myself always rooting for him. And here we are.
Have
Get
you
to,
talked? I mean,
I haven't met him yet, but I will definitely tell him that story,
oh, he'll
when
love
I
it.
do.
He'll love it. He it turns like because we had him on the podcast. Oh gosh, when was it? Right when I got back from the vacation, and he was born literally one day after I was,
Oh, nice.
and yeah, and we were both born in Ohio, Eastern Ohio, and we were in college the same 4 years, so. Yeah, he's a cool guy. I think, yeah, that would be something. Yeah. Your interviews of, Coach Boykins, that'd be great.
Yeah, there aren't many people you can regale stories of the late 90s Eastern Michigan Eagles basketball team, so he might be the one.
Do you remember that Duke upset when they beat Duke in the tournament?
I do. Yeah, that was, I mean, I wasn't there, but yeah, that was one of my early teams that I actually like really followed. So they had another guy too that played very briefly for the Spurs. His name was Derek Dial, who was just so cool. Like him and Earl Boykins together were the best. Plus a name like that, Derek Dial, just great basketball name.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast, and we're gonna put this on Twitter first, and maybe I'll only get a couple other places, and then once I've gotten the move done, we'll get it onto the Apple Pod and all the other streaming platforms. So people want to hear it first, hear it on Twitter. But Ryan, thanks so much for joining.
Anytime, man.